Welcome to Champion Center Podcast. We believe that by continued listening, you can grow relationally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Listen in now on this worship experience already in progress.
So the first of Jesus' last words was a word of forgiveness. We talked about that last week, and Jesus said as he looked down from the cross at the people who were gathered there and those who had put him there, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." The idea is to not only know Jesus forgives, but to know that he forgives me. The life change happens when we know he forgives me. Forgiveness applies to me. Forgiveness is my word. It's not just somebody else's word, but forgiveness is my word. He not only forgives those who he would say they don't know what they're doing, but he also forgives us even though we know what we're doing. Forgiveness is meant to take care of everything that is in our rearview mirror. Everything that is consistently becoming what we would call the past. The past is something that you can't do anything about. And the past isn't just something that happened 5 years ago or even 5 months ago. The past is something that happened 5 minutes ago. And when it goes into the past, if you can imagine yourself traveling, you know, on a journey and maybe driving down an interstate, riding down an interstate, and then you go by something and it's behind you. That's what it's like to have something in the past. Everything that is in the past is something you have no power to change. Everything that we regret, everything that we have said and done, everything that dishonored Christ, every personal failure that you would have a tendency to dwell on too much, that would capture your attention, everything that would hinder us from continuing to move forward, when you make forgiveness your word, not just someone else's word, but your word, that word liberates you from dwelling on your past. And it frees you from condemnation, from the personal failure, the moral failure. And then that leads you and leads us to what we call the second mile marker. Mile marker number two. The second words of Jesus, which is a word of salvation. Let me explain this to you, a little bit of background on it. As he hung on the cross between two thieves, on one side is the voice of the skeptic, the cynic, who says something like, "If you're who you say you are, then why don't you get us out of here, get us off the cross?" How many of you know people still do that a lot today with God? They just kind of come at him like that, you know. "Well, God, you this, God, do this for me." And then, you know, they start to bargain with him. And the other criminal rebuked him. And he said to him, "Look, we deserve to be here, but this man has done nothing wrong." And so he became an ally, a defendant. But then he also went a step further, and he became a believer. I don't know what had happened the last few weeks, what he saw, heard about that got him there, but somehow in that moment, he was persuaded that this is more than just another man. And he said to Jesus, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And then is the words of Jesus. It's mile marker number two. Jesus answered him, "Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. The promise of salvation. And let me just say this to you about this word, salvation. It works hand in hand with forgiveness, in that forgiveness is intended and meant to be a promise about everything that is in your past. Salvation is designed to fix our eyes on what God is putting in front of us. So it's a lot like, you know, you could look at it like the rearview mirror in your car. There's a reason it's small, where the front windshield is really big. And the reason for that is that you're not meant to be dwelling on what's behind you. It's okay to glance back. Like, it's okay to share your story with somebody who really needs to hear it about what was back there. It's okay to say, God, thank you for that. I wouldn't be here today if you hadn't been there for me then. Yes, it's okay to glance back, but it's not okay to dwell or to let your past beat you up. That's why forgiveness is for everything that's behind you. Salvation, on the other hand, is for everything in front of it. It's that big windshield. It's like the promise of life and the promise of abundant life and the promise that I will never leave you nor forsake you. It's the promise that allows us to stand in church and worship and say, I am a child of God. For the thief on the cross, the promise was paradise. But for you and me, God's promise of salvation is purpose and then paradise. See, the thief was on his way to paradise. His future was only paradise. But for us, salvation is a word that includes life, future, the plans God has for us. See, salvation is a word. A lot of people don't realize this. Salvation is a word that's far bigger than being saved from something. The Greek word for salvation in the New Testament, S-O-Z-O, sozo, is a word that denotes that we are saved for something. Not just from something, but we are saved for something. Not just from something, but for something. You know, at a wedding, for example, the couple get married, right? But marriage isn't just something that's meant to save you from a loveless, lonely life. You might want to consider that when you're getting ready to get married. Like it's not just a rescue mission so that you don't sit in the single section anymore when you're hanging out with your friends. Like it's not just about that. Marriage isn't something that just happens on your wedding day. Imagine like going to the chapel, getting married, and then going your own way. Yeah, I'm married, and you're just like living out here. No, it's meant to bring you together, right? And marriage is something that we live out every day as a husband and wife. So it happens as an event, but it's meant then to be a partnership and a life lived together. Like, marriage doesn't happen at the church. When you get married at the altar, like, real marriage happens in the kitchen. Can I get anybody to say amen about that? It happens like day by day, right? So salvation isn't just forgiveness from sin. It's waking up every day to live God's purpose in your life. I said it's waking up every day. Like, not I have to do, I get to do what God's called me to do. Wonder what it is today. Wonder what God's got in mind for me today. See, you were born with and for a purpose. And no one knows the purpose of a thing like its creator. Oh, man, come on. I'm going to help some people today. Some people ask, well, how can I know? You talk about purpose. How can I know God's purpose for me? Are you ready for this? Like, I'm going to tell you something that will sound really, really basic, but it's actually brilliant. It sounds basic, but it's brilliant. If you want to know what God's purpose is for your life, serve your way into God's purpose. The moment you serve, you will be in His purpose. And then as you are in His purpose, He will move you towards the ultimate places, spaces of serving that are intended for you to occupy. You don't discover the continuing work of His purpose by analysis. Are you getting this? Like, there's so many people, like, they're just like, they get paralysis of analysis. I don't know what to do. I don't know what God's telling me to do. I don't know what God's telling me to do. I'm wondering what God, what's the will of God? What's the will of God? I don't know. I don't know. I'm ready to go here. Do I go there? A, B, C, D, E. I don't know. Some people do that for years. Stop it. Whatever your hands find to do, do it with all of your heart as unto the Lord. Serve your way. Come on, serve your way into your purpose. That's what Jesus did. He just served His way into His purpose. That's what David did. Remember in the Old Testament, David? He's like a hero in Scripture. Well, it just started off in a shepherd field, watching his father's sheep. And then one day he takes his brother's lunch, who are out on the battlefield. He just delivers lunch. He's a waiter. And while he's there, he hears this defiant voice of a giant named Goliath that is cursing his people and his nation. He's like, somebody gonna do something about that. All you guys in weapons, like, you gonna do something about that. And they're all nerve-shaking, and he's like, I can't, and what is he doing? He's serving his way into his purpose. And you know the famous story. He finds stones, he gets his slingshot out, and in the most perhaps outrageous battle of history, where you got this 9-foot giant faced with armor on, facing this shepherd teenager with 5 stones and a slingshot, and he prevails over the giant and he cuts his head off. And then it's like, you know, in modern days, he won the Super Bowl. Like, they put him on their shoulders and they carry him around. David is a man. David is a man. David is a man. David is a man. And it goes from there to another act of serving, to another act of serving. And then he finds himself serving as a king. See, I realize that even in my life, sometimes you look at people who are maybe in places and roles that are, you feel like, are more important, although they're typically not. And you think, wow, how do I get there? A lot of young people are like, you know, well, I'm called to be a leader. I'm called to be a pastor. Well, let me just tell you where it starts. It starts, for me, it starts with picking up paper in the church, hallways, having a bus route where I go out in the neighborhood and I load children up and I bring them to church. And I don't do it like thinking, like, someday I'm going to be a pastor. I wasn't even thinking that. I got to do this first. I hate it, but no. I'll serve. Where can I help? What can I do? How can I make a difference in somebody's life? And if you attend Growth Track, if you haven't attended Growth Track, please do. Like, if God called you to this house, In fact, I hope people will attend it multiple times. It wouldn't hurt to go once a year to Growth Track, because you discover there your gifts and you discover the opportunities around you to serve. And my point is that that's what salvation is all about. Not just being saved from something, but being saved for something. You were meant to be here. Sir, you were meant to be here. Ma'am, you were meant to be here on earth, in this city, as a part of God's church, serving God's purpose for this city, in this community, right now. We look at other people and we look at Jesus and we're like, well, he was really meant to be here. So were you. No, but I'm not Jesus. I know, and he knows. But you are created by God. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. And this is your place. And this is your space. And the same way that Jesus' purpose was earthly, so is ours. Like, we want to be all heavenly about everything sometimes. Shut up, put your hands down, and do something that is helping and blessing and serving. You can sing while you do it, but do it. And our series on the mile markers is really meant to be able to see everything. Forgiveness leads to salvation. And then as you move along through every mile marker, what's meant is for you to see your whole life. From the time that you have been forgiven by God and welcomed into the presence of God, is to see your whole life as God's purpose at work in me, until someday I find myself. And by the way, I mentioned David. Let me tell you, in Acts chapter 15, here's what it says about David of the Old Testament. It says that he served his purpose in his own generation, and then he fell asleep. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the point, is that we're taking the last words of Jesus and we're showing you a snapshot. And we did a little bit last week when we talked, remember we talked about Cleo and his companion and how they turned after meeting Jesus and they went back to Jerusalem. Why did they go back to Jerusalem? Because of purpose. They realized that that purpose was calling them. They couldn't live like they had been living. They couldn't do. They weren't supposed to do what they had been doing. They were now answering the call of God in their life. And salvation was supposed to be walked out and lived out from one place to another place until someday, hopefully, we end up in the presence of God and we hear him say, well done. Like, can I just tell you, I know this sounds blasphemous to some of you, but you need to understand that Jesus gets celebrated. Jesus is the Son of God. I get all of that. But you will be someday celebrated in a similar way for your mission as you walk out and you serve the purpose of God as Jesus himself was. You will be celebrated. You will hear, well done, good and faithful. Man, that ought to make somebody happy, somebody thankful. So let me read you a couple of verses here. It says in Philippians 1 and 6, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion. He that began a good work in you, it didn't stop at night in 1998 when you gave your heart to the Lord and you remember the emotions of that moment. It wasn't meant to be over there. He that began, that was just the beginning. He that began that work in you, he will carry it on. He's still working. I said he's still working. Salvation is still at work in all of our lives. Philippians 2:13 says, "For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to," what? "Fulfill his good purpose." Let me just say one more thing, and I'm going to move on to the next mile marker here and show you how it ties in. But without an awareness of salvation, we fixate way too much on what is called sins of commission. So, and a lot, probably more Christians than not would be doing this right now. Focus way too much on don't do this, don't do that, don't go here, don't go there. And then we pass it on to other people who we don't see them living like we think they ought to. And we feel our duty, like, tell them, don't you do that, don't you do that. Church cops. Won't you do that? You shouldn't wear that, girl. You shouldn't be wearing that clothes like that, girl. You are saved, girl. I wonder sometimes the motive when people start correcting people. Like, I don't want to go out there right now. But the Bible tells us all to work out our own salvation, and this is what it means. Like, be open with God, and be mindful. But the whole "don't do this" doesn't build us up. We're not meant to dwell on the sins of commission that we commit, the "don't do this" mindset. And if you're at Champion Center and you're doing that as part of our church, please stop. Like, we don't need that attitude. We need a lot, you know, encouragement is what it's all about. And lifting one another up, and invite people into life groups and small groups. Just let Jesus do what Jesus can do. He does it a lot better than us with our attitude of don't do, trying to legislate holiness. Like, you cannot legislate holiness with a "don't do" attitude. Holiness is something that God gives us that works within us. Okay, so here's the problem with that approach, is that you can do nothing wrong and still do nothing right. And that's exactly, ladies and gentlemen, where so many have got stuck in the work of salvation. You became that patrol of all the other Christians. And you find people that you think you should be letting them know and setting them in order, but what you don't realize is you got stuck there. And you have stayed there. And you think that just because you don't do something, I mean, even if you do, everyone does things wrong. But let's pretend you could get to the place where you do nothing wrong. Let's just imagine that you could actually do that. Here's my point. You can get to the place, if you get to the place where you do nothing wrong, it doesn't mean you're doing something right. And I would rather have someone who is wholeheartedly following Jesus, waking up every day and saying, "What do you have for me? Who can I share my faith with today?" All eyes, all who has still got some mess ups, mix up, goof ups going on, than to have a self-righteous person who's always walking around, you know, thinking, you know, got to get this right, and it's all about don't, who isn't really doing anything to help other people find Christ and be a witness to other people, to be light and to be salt. Okay, so I got a mile marker number three. The third word is a word of relationship. And Jesus spoke this from the cross He looks out, John 19, and he says, "Woman, here is your son." And he's talking to John the Beloved, who was the youngest of all the disciples. And then he looks at his own mother, Mary, and he says, "Woman, here is your son," to Mary. And then he looks at John, and he said, "Here is your mother." Listen to my last few moments here. The third mile marker is about relationships. And it's an intentional sequence that you first know you are forgiven and that things in your rearview mirror are forgiven in your life by God, never to be remembered against you again. The second mile marker is to realize that you are here on purpose and for purpose, and that your salvation is intended to be worked out every day. Not being saved from something only, but being saved for something. Okay? And then as you do that, something that comes right up next to that is relationships. The cross redefines our family. Those who were not family before the cross become family because of the cross. Son, behold your mother. Mother, behold your son. It looks a little different maybe in our world today, but what you have to understand and open your heart to is that on this side of the cross, you're being connected to a family that is now based not on the commonality of liking to do a certain sport. I mean, that can happen as well, but not the commonality of having the same last name, natural name, but the commonality of coming to the cross and believing, actually putting your faith in Christ, and that common ground becomes the basis upon which you are brought in to the family. And our decision to follow Jesus, that's the first thing my wife and I, Sheila, had in common, was that decision. That was the first common denominator. And I would just recommend for anyone who's headed into relationship of that kind, like that, don't try to do it without that common ground. And I would also recommend to anybody here today who's your circle of friendships, you're realizing they're not going where you're going with the purpose of God in mind, I would just say to you, like, the cross is meant to change everything, including who you identify as your family. Jesus was a friend of sinners, but he did life with those who believe, with those who have common purpose. And the process of salvation in your life will be worked out in the context of relationship with the right people. Man, I just feel this for some of you today. Like, your purpose is experienced in the context of relationship with the right people. And I feel like there are people who are here this weekend who would say, no. That's where I draw the line. Like, I get saved and it's up to them, my friend, but they're still my friends, they're still my buds. We grew up together, we will stay that way. We're like this, we're like that, we're like two peas in a pod. We're always, that's my family. Like, that's my, and I feel like there are some who would take this teaching and would become resistant and would say, no, 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 no. And that's not going to happen to me. And I would just say to you that potentially that's why maybe you haven't experienced your own progress in moving forward with your salvation, with your relationship with God. Because we are meant to be, and you can still continue to be friends with sinners, but you're not meant on this side of the cross to do life with sinners. If you're going north, they're going south. If you're going east, they're going west. There's just no way that you can go into life and into the future hand in hand. The Bible says, how can two walk together except they be agreed? And I know this is a hard word for so many of us, and I know like some of you would get mad. Please don't get mad at me. I'm just the messenger. I'm saying to you today, God has something great for you, and God has something in the future for you. And what it means is that you wholeheartedly have to embrace the family on this side of the cross, the people, come on, that God's putting into your life on this side. Come on this side. Come on this side of the cross. I'm going to ask you to stand, if you would, around the house there in Bellevue, here in Tacoma. In my Father's house. I want to sing that in just a minute, but I want to just say one more thing. I really feel what I'm saying to you today. I feel like this week is going to be the week that some of you, God's talking to you, and you've gotten so far in your relationship with Him, but you felt the lid go on. And I don't want you to go be mean to anybody. I don't want you to go tell somebody like, I can't be your friend anymore because I'm a Jesus follower. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. But just begin to let Jesus guide you and start opening up to the idea that God's putting people into your life. And can I tell you, if it ends up that you give up a friend or two or three for the sake of the gospel, He will bring better and more friends. I promise you. Come on, this is family, and God is building the family.
Thank you for listening today. We hope that you enjoyed today's teaching. If you'd like to help support this podcast, give today and help spread messages all over the world. Download our app and select Give or go to cc.church/give. Thanks and have a great week.